NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Years ago today, the United States learned of a tragedy that rocked the entire world to its foundation. On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was waving to a massive crowd of spectators from a limousine in the heart of Dallas, Texas, when gunfire erupted. The first shot seemed to have missed the president. The security detail escorting his motorcade quickly began scanning the surroundings, trying to figure out where the shot came from or if it really was a gunshot. Seconds later, a second shot rang out. This time, the crowd sees Kennedy reach for his throat. He'd been hit. The first lady, Jackie, leaned over to him to see what was wrong as a third and fatal shot struck JFK in the head, killing him instantly. The entire assassination was captured on film by onlooker Abraham Zapruder. The film has been analyzed by millions and millions of people over the decades, which has led to a massive number of theories as to who killed JFK. Joining me today to share a few of the wilder theories about the case are the hosts of the Crime Countdown podcast, Ash and Elena. This is Season 9, Episode 11, the case of the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we begin the interview, I want to let all of you know that this particular episode is not a serious, in-depth breakdown of the case. Ash, Elena, and I are about to zip through several of the most outrageous theories that people have developed over the last nearly six decades. We do so in much the same way that they would do on their podcast, which is because part of the point of this series is to introduce you to other styles and other podcasts to see if it's something you might be interested in. But if you're looking for a deep and serious discussion about the case, have no fear. This week's Friday follow-up features two experts on the case, one of whom lived through the assassination and has been studying it ever since. That will be Friday. But today, we're going to relax a little, and I hope you enjoy what really was a fun discussion. Here's Ash and Elena. Ash, Elena, how are you guys?
Hello, we are great. How are you?
Doing really well. I only heard one and I don't know which one.
That was Elena.
Hello.
And this is Ash. I'm good too. How are you?
That's good to know. I'm doing well. I'm really excited to do this. Through a former connection of mine, John Cohen, he put me in touch with you guys because I was looking for someone to talk about the JFK assassination case. And through him, I listened to a couple of your guys' episodes, and you guys are fun.
Thanks. We try to be.
Thank you. And you know what? We love John, and we love JFK assassination theories. So this is
it's
like a match
setup.
Made in heaven.
Perfect combination. I was sort of hoping there was a "We love you, Bob" in there, but that's fine. My feelings aren't hurt.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? We got cut off. We love Bob.
Huge fans of Bob and all
so
his
much.
Work.
Right. That's why it's so awesome that we're all working together now.
Of course.
That's great. So first, before we get into the talk about the JFK assassination, I'm interested to see where this goes because the format of your podcast is called Crime Countdown. Is you guys do like a top 10 list of sort of like I just listened the other day to your Halloween murders episode. It's you guys don't go super in depth with any one thing. You kind of just hit on a bunch of little things. So I'm curious to see where this goes. But before we do that, I want to learn and for my audience to learn a little bit about you guys. Who are you two?
Who are we?
I was literally just going to say, who are we?
Who are you? Well, I'll go first. I'm Elena. And Ash and I are actually niece and aunt. And there's 10 years apart. We're 10 years apart. And we actually, we were raised as sisters. So we consider ourselves more sisters.
Yes.
But I am on, when I'm not doing Morbid, our other podcast besides Crime Countdown, I am doing autopsy technician thing. So I'm eviscerating people on my off time.
Casual.
Wait. Yeah. You're an autopsy technician?
Yeah.
That's your day job?
Yeah, that's my day job / night job.
That explains so much. So I don't know if you guys know that I used to be a firefighter. I was for 15 years. And, you know, when I listen to your podcast and you know, one great thing about this format that we're doing this season is people are getting introduced to new shows that they can check out, kind of find their next big binge.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, there's new shows. Some shows are not for everybody. Some are very, people are looking for very serious shows. People are looking for more lighthearted shows. I tend to like the lighthearted ones a little more because our show is so serious. But part of that, I think, is from my years of being a firefighter. That's kind of how in our industry we deal with really awful, stressful situations is we joke around about them a little bit. It makes us feel better. Mm-hmm. And so I can kind of get some of your personality in the fact that you work on autopsies.
Yeah, it's completely like, you know, it, the gallows humor. It's like necessary to get through a shift. You need it.
Right. OK, so Elena is an autopsy technician.
Yes.
Ash, what do you do? Do you have a day job, or are you a full-time podcaster now?
I am technically a full-time podcaster, but I still do freelance hairdressing on the side. I was working at a salon, and then everything with the pandemic hit, and I was like, well, you know what? Let's just focus on the podcast for now. But I'm like complete opposite end of the spectrum, like different side of the brain.
Yep, definitely.
Right. Well, and that makes a great combination. So we have an autopsy technician and a hairstylist.
Yeah.
Make a podcast. It sounds like a joke you'd hear in a bar.
Yeah, we cover all bases.
We really do.
So that's your entire history leading up to. Did either of you ever have any experience working in media, entertainment, in the audio world, or those were your day jobs and then you decided to make a podcast?
Yeah, neither one of us had any experience with this. And if you listen to our first episodes of Morbid, it's pretty apparent.
We're like essentially underwater in the first, I'd say, like 20 episodes.
Oh, yeah. We're 10,000 leagues under the sea in the first. Like, yeah, it's pretty rough.
You know, I have 10 episodes just like that from 2015 when I started doing it with no experience.
I love that.
I think
that
everyone has that like little group of episodes in the beginning. And that's how you know who your true fans are, if they stuck through those episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had to change the name of my podcast to try to hide from those episodes.
That's actually genius.
You know what? We might do that.
I know. Let's archive those.
So how did you guys get to, so you grew up together like sisters, and you guys have these very, very different jobs. So how does it come to be that at some point you guys make a podcast and then another podcast, and both are very popular shows? How did you guys, what did that conversation go like? Whose idea was it? How did you become podcasters?
So it was definitely, it was something we've talked about since, I mean, we're both huge podcast listeners, mm-hmm. and we have been forever. And I've always been obsessed with true crime. I've always, and again, this is Elena, just in case. Some people can't tell our voices apart.
I totally knew it was Elena.
Oh, good. Okay. See, we're best friends now. We get it.
Right.
So I've always been obsessed with kind of like the weird and the macabre and spooky and horror movies. I've just always been drawn to that side of everything. Mm-hmm. And so Ash kind of had no choice growing up but to also be part of all that, because I just kind of like force fed her in.
Like from birth. I remember being like 7 and 8 watching those like E! True Hollywood like top 10 scariest crimes in Hollywood. And I'm like, yeah, awesome.
And I think one day we were always talking about it. I have like an entire bookshelf of true crime books and like medical examiner books. And I was like, you know, we have all this like weird, useless knowledge. I feel like maybe we should just like try a podcast. We just like randomly came up with it one day, both of us.
Was it over drinks by any chance?
It wasn't, weirdly enough. I think it was like
probably over coffee, knowing us.
Over coffee, probably. Yeah. And it was Ash who came up with the name, actually. And we were like, okay, we'll just do this just to kind of get it out of our head and like just try it.
And 4 people will listen. It'll be like lots of fun.
We never, ever, ever went into it thinking it would be at all successful. No. Really.
We're still really confused about the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, this is cool. When did this happen?
Well, that's what's so cool about this industry is you can, you know, anybody, and I've shown that, you guys have shown that, anybody can make a podcast with it.
Yeah.
When I started, it was with, the, you know, with a couple $100, you could buy the stuff to make one. Now you can make one on your phone.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if anybody listens. You know, when I made my first podcast, you know, it didn't matter if anybody listened. It was just for fun. And then if it's good and people like it, then it takes off. And so you guys had that very similar experience that I did, where you just, you know, let's just start it and see what happens. So was Morbid first before Crime Con or Crime Countdown?
Yeah, Morbid was first. And then I'd say like a year and a half into doing Morbid, we were approached by Max and everybody over at Parcast for Crime Countdown. And they explained the whole thing to us. It's like Max's little like brainchild. And we were like, yes, mm-hmm. we are so in.
And I mean, who doesn't love a top 10 list of anything? I think it's like nice and digestible. So I think I always look for that stuff. And, you know, if you're not, you don't really have a lot of time, you're in the car or something, it's kind of a shorter episode, mm-hmm. but you get a lot that you can go look further into.
It's like an extra dose of Morbid.
Yeah.
Right. It's a little bit David Letterman-esque.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
That's what we're going for.
Right. I mean, so Crime Countdown was a brainchild of someone over at Parcast. They brought it to you guys.
Yeah.
Must be because they loved your work on Morbid.
It must be.
I guess so. Pat self on back.
You know, I'll be honest, when I listened to a couple of your episodes, I thought, oh, they must be, because I honestly had no idea who you guys were as far as your background. So like, oh, they must be voice actresses, because I know you know, Parcast does a lot of scripted podcasts and things like this. Like, oh, they must be voice actresses that they brought in for this, but you just had a podcast they liked, and so they just said, hey, why don't you try this one too?
Wow, that's such a good compliment. I know. Thank you so much.
A voice actress. Let me add that to my resume.
I know.
Well, okay, so now I need to know a little bit about your guys' process, because when I listened to those episodes, you guys are very quick and quippy and everything flows very smoothly. Are you working off a script? And if so, do you write it, or do you have a team behind you setting you guys up?
So for Crime Countdown, we have like a kind of like a framework script.
Yeah, like an outline, I would call
it. Yeah, where they give us all the like really straight information. Just here's the facts bulleted. And then we can basically take that however we want, and we can go wherever we want with it. And then I think we just be, and I think it's too much to our benefit that we've grown up our entire lives together. So we know each other's humor. Mm-hmm. We know we kind of flow that way with each other anyways. So it just kind of like, once it starts, we can't stop.
Even in real life, we have this like weird banter between us. If you watch Gilmore Girls, I think that we are Rory and Lorelai Gilmore.
I'm shocked. So I was thinking after listening to that, like, surely this is scripted and highly edited to make it sound so quick. And then when I get them on the phone, it's going to be very different. And you guys sound the same together now, finishing each other's sentences as you do on the podcast.
Thank you.
So we are going to be talking today about the JFK assassination. Today, the day this is airing, is the anniversary, the 57th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You guys have coming, when is your episode going to drop? Because I've been told you've already recorded an episode with a top 10 countdown about the top 10 JFK theories. It's going to drop, is it later this week? Keep in mind, we're in a time machine and it is November 22nd right now.
I think it's coming out on November 23rd, I want to say.
Okay, so do you guys drop on Mondays?
The Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
I was going to say that Monday.
Okay, so tomorrow.
Look at that.
You guys, your episode's going to drop. So today I'm going to try to take you guys into a little more depth and cover a few of these top 10. And then anybody that wants to hear the rest of them can then tune in tomorrow to Crime Countdown to get the full top 10 list, which I will be doing because I didn't know there were 10 theories.
We didn't either. When we first went into it, we were like, whoa.
Yeah. And then we got into it and we were like, whoa. And personally, I was like, I need to find even more of these. These are crazy.
I know, it just goes down a rabbit hole once you start.
Seriously.
Okay, so let's get into this. I asked you guys if you could pull together 3 to 5 theories. So Ash, or I'm gonna tell you which one. Ash, you get to go first.
Okay, perfect.
What is one of your theories, or it can be your favorite theory, or which one do you want to talk about first?
My favorite theory is the Secret Service agent theory, where the Secret Service agent was super, super hungover. I think it was George Hickey, and he was riding in the car behind JFK. And he had gone out with his pals, like partying the night before.
Big Secret Service party the night before.
You know how they go.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Is there like evidence to support that the man was out drinking the night before?
I don't know if it's just like everybody talking about it the next day or...
It's pretty accepted though that they were all like out drinking the night before.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So go on. So we have a hungover Secret Service agent.
Yep, right, which is next to already JFK. Recipe for disaster. So he's
the beginning of a great joke.
Yeah, exactly. He's riding in the car behind JFK. And when the first shot was fired, I guess he responded by firing back, like against the shot in that direction. But the car lurched and he basically apparently shot JFK with the second kill shot.
Wait, okay.
So you're like, let me get this straight.
I was in the middle of sipping my coffee when you said that. So there's a legit theory out there that the hungover Secret Service agent hears the first shot, which is the wounding shot, probably the one that hit Kennedy in the neck. And then in returning fire, he shoots Kennedy in the head.
Yes, exactly.
Am I understanding that right?
You got that exactly right.
Basically the worst day at the job ever.
I think he was promptly fired the next day.
Like, it's bad when you hit reply all on an email at work.
Shooting your boss is really
bad. This is
up
real
there.
Bad.
Wow. Like, I've literally never heard this. And now I'm writing down the to go down the rabbit hole of the Secret Service. So I have a guy coming in this weekend for my other podcast, Bob and Weave, to talk about the Kennedy assassination, who is like, he's a history professor and he's like researched this forever. And I am definitely asking him about the hungover Secret Service agent.
I want to hear more about
it. I do too. I hope he knows what you're talking about. He's not going to be like, what are those girls saying over there?
They made that up.
Okay, so we have theory number one is the hungover Secret Service agent. And so then obviously that would involve a cover-up. It has to be.
Oh, for sure.
No one knows that the Secret Service agent actually shot his boss with, I'm assuming, a pistol?
Yeah, I think so.
I think
so,
it was
right?
A pistol, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I think that was kind of part of it, too, was like one of the bullet was supposedly like kind of like disintegrated in his skull. And they said that it didn't match the bullet that was supposedly coming from Lee Harvey Oswald's gun. So they were like, ooh, is this another gun? And they tried to pretend that it was like maybe the Secret Service, you know, the bullet that came from that gun was the one that disintegrated. There's all these like crazy theories.
Whose gun done it?
Right. So is this like have you guys been in? Is this like a Reddit rabbit hole somewhere?
Oh, it for sure is.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, I am going into that rabbit hole.
Do it, but like, okay. Godspeed.
Good luck. Right.
So, all right. So that's Ash. Elena, what is your number one theory?
So my number one theory is just as ridiculous, but in a different way. It's called the Umbrella Man theory.
This is a good one.
Oh, this one I'm a little bit familiar with. Okay.
This one's kind of fun just because I feel really bad for this guy. So this guy's name was Louis Stephen Witt, and he just happened to be on the sidelines of this whole parade with a black umbrella. And he was like dressed very nicely, and he's holding the black umbrella open over his head. But it was like a nice sunny day, which a lot of people point to as like, why, you know, that's unusual, but like, if you're pale, you understand.
You
like
get
maybe
it.
He was just trying to use it as a parasol. But either way, people were thinking that, you know, he was very out of place. He looked a little strange. So they were thinking that maybe he was signaling to the shooter, but with that umbrella.
Didn't he like open and close the umbrella? Like
he
right before?
Did.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of like a weird timed thing. So they thought maybe he was signaling to the shooter with that. They also thought that maybe he had a poison dart that was possibly hidden in the umbrella, or he used the umbrella as a distraction, and that he shot the poison dart into JFK's neck, which immobilized him, allowing for the kill shot. Which, okay, whoa.
Yeah, that was, see, you lost me there. You had me with the umbrella and the signaling, but there's actually a theory out there that he shot a poison dart, you heard it here first, out of his umbrella.
Yeah.
We're getting wild with it.
So it seems totally, I think it checks out.
You know, poison darts all over the place.
Totally.
Wow. You know, I've always been interested in that. You know, there's the crazy thing about this is that it never happened before, but we have a live video of the assassination of a president. And so there's all this stuff to pick apart, and it's just it's fascinating to watch it. I want to be, I guess it's going to be my turn for theory number three, and this is a crazy one. Have you guys considered or looked into the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone?
That one, see, I go back and forth with that.
I know,
one.
I do too.
Because there's a lot there's a lot for it and there's a lot against it, I feel.
I feel like I can't make up my mind on that one at all. I feel like every time I've made up my mind, I find more evidence and I'm like, well, crap, maybe he didn't or maybe he did.
Yeah, like Reddit comes and just wakes me up and tells me no, and then I have to go down another rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, it's the least interesting theory. So why is it, do you guys have an opinion? You said that you kind of go back and forth. What are some issues or what is some evidence that leads you to believe that it was Oswald alone? And then we'll go through some things that make you believe that it wasn't.
So it kind of, I think just like logic kind of makes me feel like maybe he acted alone. Like, because it does kind of all, when they give you everything with that theory, it lines up. Like, it just makes sense. There's really no, and the fact that they haven't presented anything that can really show that there was another shooter definitely makes you kind of lean towards it. But then you think about the fact that it's like the government and there's all these crazy conspiracies and some of them make a little bit of sense. Like there's like the grassy knoll theory with the second shooter. And it's kind of, and it kind of, you know, lends a little credence to it a little bit.
Well, that, you know, I got to tell you, Kevin Costner had me convinced about, I don't know, was it 20 years ago when the JFK movie came out with him?
Yes.
Yeah. He had me convinced that there was definitely a second shooter because everything made sense. And I had to, after watching that show, I had to remind myself about 30 times that it's not a documentary because it's so convincing. But then a lot of the stuff that was in there is, you know, it seems accurate. You know, the whole magic bullet theory.
Exactly.
Is that one you guys have in your collection there?
Yeah. The grassy knoll theory is like a primo on our list.
Yeah. And the grassy knoll theory is the one that has the magic bullet that went through JFK and then hit Texas Governor John B. Connolly, which is like, whoa, but it does happen, I guess.
Can you walk us through the magic bullet theory?
So the magic bullet theory is that they're saying there's a second shooter in this theory and that three shots were fired, but the first one missed. And they're saying the second shot is that magic bullet. And they call it the magic bullet because it supposedly went through JFK and then hit Texas Governor John B. Connolly at like the same bullet, which it can happen. Like they've done like forensics that shows that it can happen. But then they're saying that the third bullet is the one that actually killed JFK.
And the third bullet came from the grassy knoll.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're saying a lot of people don't believe the magic bullet thing, that it would actually go through, that this particular bullet would go through two people. But, and I think it's like JFK's head snaps backwards, which a lot of people point to as him being shot from the front.
Right.
But it kind of said, that kind of makes sense that he just kind of got shot and the force of it shot him backward. You know, it's like, it's hard for people to understand the physics of it. It's hard for anybody to.
I don't understand the physics of it. You know, and the whole magic bullet theory depends on what you're calling the theory. Kind of, I think it goes both ways. So that the reason they call it the magic bullet is not necessarily just because it went through Kennedy and Connolly in front of him, which I think surely can happen, but it's because of the path of travel. It's like the magic bullet supposedly went into the back of Kennedy's neck.
Yes.
Out of his throat, into the back of the seat in front of him, through, and I'm working from memory here, but through Connolly's right shoulder.
Yes.
And then through Connolly's right wrist, and then embeds in Connolly's left thigh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot about where it ended up.
Yeah. And so it was like, you know, and that was, you know, Kevin Costner explained, you know, the bullet made a 90 degree turn and then went completely across his body into his left thigh, which seemed crazy. I have heard people explain that a little bit. Apparently, in the presidential limousine, the Kennedy seat in the back was raised up higher, and Connolly's seat was raised down lower, so that, you know, he could be up higher and waving. And that after the first shot, which there's some people say was a miss, that Connolly had turned toward, you know, turned to the right towards, so that maybe the path of travel works. But, you know, I've heard the magic bullet theory used to explain that it was one shooter, that it was Oswald alone, because, you know, they're trying to explain how could one person shoot and miss, shoot, hit Kennedy in the throat, shoot again and hit Connolly, and then shoot again and make the kill shot on Kennedy's head. And so the magic bullet theory kind of came into, like, well, this is how, because two of those shots were one shot.
Exactly.
Just kind of explains everything away.
Yeah. All you have to do is have this magic bullet. But the physics of his head going, as Costner said over and over again, back and to the left, back and to the left, back and to the left. I still don't. Now, Elena, I think you're the autopsy technician.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that.
Of course.
So have you ever in your day job or night job, have you ever worked on gunshot wounds like this?
I have
or
not.
Any kind of gunshot wounds?
On this particular, I've not gotten a gunshot wound to like the head or the neck or anything like that. But I can, and that's the thing, because it's, I there's times when I think I understand it when I like see the Zapruder film and I'm like, oh, so the bullet went in here and that's why his head snaps this way. And that's, but then you watch it again and you're like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like there's really, the physics really don't line up anyway in this whole thing, unfortunately.
That's my issue with it.
Yeah.
Is the kill shot. And I've heard people explain, some smart people, much smarter than me, have explained how the round can come from back and to the right and it can cause the head to go back and to the left. But then you have, you know, you have Jackie, who after that fatal shot, we see climbing out of the seat, climbing back towards, you know, the trunk of the car, and actually picks up a piece of her husband's brain, actually.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. That is
from the, and that's, I don't, like, how, if it came from the other way, all the force is going forward, how did that end up back there? And, you know, and I've investigated a lot of crime scenes in what I do. But, you know, and I'm also a hunter, so I've seen what bullet wounds do. And I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything get projected back towards the firing point like that. So
that is what the confusing thing is. And I think it's, I've seen some people try to explain it where like the bullet went in and it caused some kind of, you know, some kind of force happened when it like shattered part of his skull that possibly blew it in the opposite direction, you know what I mean? Like that kind of like pushes him the other way than you would think he would go. But it's, again, like no, nobody can really say for sure. It's one of those things that we're just like never going to know.
If only Zapruder had a better, like an HD camera
that we
could put, you know, at a high frame rate that we could really slow down. I think he really dropped the ball there.
He really did.
We just need someone to travel back in time and just kind of like put that in there for him.
Real quick. Grab an iPhone with the three cameras on it.
There you go.
Right, right. You know, speaking of traveling back in time, side note, have either of you watched or read Stephen King's 11/22/63?
No, that's one that I've been meaning to, especially after all of this, it's one that I've been meaning to pick up because I love Stephen King, but I've heard a lot about it.
It's so good. So I listened to the audiobook, fabulous, and then there was a Hulu original that with James Franco.
Oh yeah!
Oh, somebody just asked us if we had seen that. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's really good. The show is good, not quite as good as the book, but anyway, it's for you listeners. There's a recommendation for if you're looking for something to listen to or watch. But it is about time travel, trying to stop the Kennedy assassination.
Love that. Yeah. Ooh, thank you for that recommendation.
All right. So what is our next theory to discuss?
My like second favorite, it's honestly a tie for my first favorite, is that the mob did it, because I love any good mob story.
You got it.
And this is Ash. So basically they're saying because
of course I knew it was Ash.
Because RFK was so like into taking down organized crime. They're basically saying that the mob was like, you know what? We're going to take out your brother. So,
yeah.
You know, you just never know what happened.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
The mob is pretty shady, so.
Well, and that sort of ties into some of the Jack Ruby stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the story gets crazier as like the week goes on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that they catch Oswald, and then, you know, we get the American people in 1963 got to see the second murder happen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not that the Brooders was on TV, but yeah, I mean, as they're taking Oswald out, Jack Ruby steps out and shoots him. Didn't he have some kind of ties to the mob, or it was expected that he did?
I think that it was suspected that he did at one point.
Yeah, I think that was the first thing people thought of.
But then there was also something like, I think he had, I don't know if you guys have dug into this, but I think like he had like terminal cancer. Like, or, so he
oh
was,
yeah. You know, he was, I do remember reading that.
So yeah. And I've read that he, you know, that there's these conspiracy theories that it was to, you know, eliminate the patsy for the mob. But then I've also heard that he wanted to do this before he died because he loved Kennedy. I have no idea, but the mob hit seems interesting. It seems like they would go after Robert like they did a few years later instead of his brother, though.
That is true.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of like third parties happening now, because it's like all of a sudden we're bringing in the mob that's going after JFK because of RFK.
Yeah,
it is
a little weird.
Right. That's a hell of a message to send. Like, I'm mad at you, so I'm going to kill your brother, the president.
Who is the president? Yeah, like that's a real... But then again, that's a real big message to send.
And I feel like sometimes that is how the mob takes care of things. It's like, I'm going to kill the person that you love the most.
That's very true.
So you better watch out.
Yeah, yeah. So it makes sense until, you know, he's the president.
Exactly.
Like, it seems like a difficult target to choose instead of, you know, someone who's maybe closer to you or closer to him or some kind of close loved one.
Exactly.
All right. So, Elena, what do you have next?
All right, so I'm going to say that my next one that I really like is the Mary Pinchot Meyer one.
That's a good one.
This one I had no idea about before. This is like all
I've never even heard of this. Explain this to me.
So Mary Pinchot Meyer was a really well-known, like very, you know, high-up socialite. She hung out with all these, you know, all the Kennedys.
She was like really good friends with Jackie.
Yeah, it's even shadier.
I think they were neighbors, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, don't you worry. We're going to talk about that. Because she had some shady stuff going on. So she went to high school with JFK, and they were friends. They were good friends. They stayed friends. Well, they started having an affair after her divorce in 1958. And in case anybody doesn't know, he was married to Jackie Kennedy. So that was
right,
no good.
JFK was married.
He sure was. Like, despite popular belief, he was married. So she would actually visit him at the White House while Jackie was out of town. And at the time, she was friends, like really good friends with Jackie. They took walks all the time, like shady.
Apparently not as good friends as Jackie thought.
Yeah, apparently.
Right.
They even have letters that he wrote to her that they discovered afterwards that are like actual. I think they're like they're being displayed somewhere now. But in one of them, he literally is like asking her to come to Boston to be with him on the Cape. And it's like, why don't you just say yes, my dear? Like, it's like very clear that they're having an affair. So what happened to her was she was shot while walking in broad daylight in a place where she had always walked. She was shot with one shot to the head and one to the chest, like execution style. This would be weird kind of all by itself, but...
Is this before or after the Kennedy assassination?
This was afterwards, and it was also after the release of the Warren Commission that said the assassination was the work of the lone gunman. She disagreed, mm-hmm. and she disagreed very vocally.
I was going to say this. Very publicly.
Yeah. So that's something. And then they found out that the CIA was wiretapping her phone after the murder. And this is when they found it out after the murder, and that the counterintelligence chief was caught breaking into her studio to find her diary.
So what's the theory here, that she had something to do with the assassination, or she was the impetus for it, or the reason for it?
I think she was catching on to it.
I think she knew too much. She knows, because her disagreeing with that lone gunman theory to me is like, wait a second.
What did she know?
So what did she know about that lone gunman theory?
I wonder. So. Trying to, this theory being new to me, is this something like that this relationship that he has with her is getting dangerous, or somebody in government sees this as being dangerous, so maybe they put a stop to it, and then when she tries, she's thinking about whistleblowing, they put an end to her as well?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And for them to go in and try to get her diary, which I don't think they found ever, so maybe they did find it because they didn't find it afterwards, I think they knew that maybe there was some things she was writing down in her journal about this stuff, maybe thoughts that she had. And the fact that they had that letter between them, that they were clearly having like a pretty intense affair. Mm-hmm. And I think they were thinking maybe she knows something that she shouldn't know and she's going to yell about
it. We don't want her to share with the public.
So we got to take her on a long vacation.
They take her to the train station.
They sure did.
If you know you're Yellowstone. Are you guys Yellowstone fans?
Yes. As soon as you said that, I was like, they sure did.
Right. Okay, that's super interesting. We've got time for one more. What's the last, the most important theory for our audience to hear about before we put an end to this?
I think this is the best one to end on, that the FBI was behind the assassination. This is just a lot of fun, right? To be honest.
Right. The FBI, I mean, and in my opinion, maybe under the direction of LBJ, who
yes.
wanted to be president.
Yes.
There you go.
And J. Edgar Hoover, because he was actually running the FBI at that time, and he was about to mm-hmm. lose his job because JFK didn't like him.
There you go.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I did not know that. So what are the beats of that theory? Is it just the FBI was involved, or is there more to it?
So they think that J. Edgar Hoover knew of various plots to kill Kennedy and just didn't take any action because I guess he failed to inform the Secret Service of threats to the president's life.
Whew. I love how he's just like letting, he's like, oh yeah, I heard that somebody wanted to murder the president, but I'm just going to go about my day.
Yeah, you know, that's not in my jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then doesn't do anything about it. And he's like, oh, I didn't kill him.
Yeah, exactly. I had nothing to do with that.
And they kind of thought that he was setting up LBJ to take over as president.
Oh, there you go.
Right. Well, there's so many like spinoffs of conspiracy theories about, you know, if LBJ was involved and why, if he was, why he would have done it, why the government went along with it. Some of it ties in with like what was going on in Vietnam. There's all kinds of really interesting, crazy theories. Do you guys get into any of that in the rest of your top 10 countdown that's coming out tomorrow?
We do get into a couple of things that have to do with that. We talk about the CIA. We talk about a couple of other like interesting players that I had no idea were even involved in this whole thing, like journalists mm-hmm. and stuff. So there's a lot of interesting deaths that seem to happen around this that they're connecting to it.
Yeah.
That we talk about.
There's also a theory that Lee Harvey Oswald himself was an FBI informant that ended up getting framed for the murder. That's another good one.
Well, he did say he was a patsy.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, this has been awesome. I hesitate to say it's been fun, but it really has been. but when we're talking about the murder of someone. But I will definitely be checking out your guys' podcast tomorrow to hear the rest of these theories. And also for our audience, if you're listening to this, if you're one of the people that don't like fun and you want to hear more in-depth stuff, make sure you tune into this week's Friday follow-up because myself and Mike and Zach are going to dig into this pretty deeply on the follow-up this week. But for now, Ash and Elena, thank you guys for coming on. This has been, as I said, it's been fun. It's been interesting. I learned a couple new theories I didn't know about. And before I let you guys go, each of you tell me, aside from the JFK one, what's your favorite Crime Countdown episode that our listeners should go check out?
So this is Elena. And also, I just want to say thank you so much for having us on here. It really has been fun, even though we've talked about like a pretty famous murder. and I would say my favorite episode so far, we have a few that haven't come out yet that are going to be awesome. But my favorite one was the stolen body parts episode. And it's exactly what it sounds like.
That was a very good one.
Yeah.
So that is a top 10
stolen body parts
of 10 different cases where there were stolen body parts.
Oh, yeah. And there's every body part you can probably conceive right now on that list.
I have a few I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah.
all right. And Ash?
My favorite, I think, would have to be Daring Prison Breaks. That one was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Daring Prison Breaks. So there you guys have it. You can hear about stolen body parts. You can hear 10 different cases, top 10 cases of daring prison breaks. You get JFK tomorrow. And I would say that in listening to Ash and Elena on this episode, give you a pretty good flavor of what their podcast sounds like. Sounds interesting to you, go check it out. And once again, guys, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing and sound engineered by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kay Wood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes videos of the creation of our Friday follow-up episodes that always include 10 to 30 minutes of pre-show bonus chat. Other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. To become a patron, just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. And I personally can be found on social media at Bob Ruff Truth, and Mike can be found at Murb Gaming. MURRBGAMING. Don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
You were up at 4, baking pastries at 5, and open at 6. 100th cappuccino by 8, 200th customer by 9, and there's still 12 hours to go. That's why you need a business broadband that works as hard as you do. Introducing Sky Business. With 4G internet backup and our Stay Connected guarantee, that's better business. To find out more, visit skybusiness.com. Sky Fiber only, 30-second 4G activation or one-off credit. New customers, Pro Plus packs only. T's and C's apply.